I mean, the obvious thing is have a big gallery show with all my work, but I don't know if I want that yet. I mean, I think that comes under lists of things that I should think I want.
Yeah.
I think I should want.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if it's actually what I do want.
Hi, and welcome to episode 54 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And you all can't see Alice, obviously, but she's just all smiley and full of energy, and she just looks really happy, so this should be a good one. She'll probably cheer me up.
Well, do you know what made me laugh? We just discovered some really good news. So thank you to Nikki Cotton, who's an artist friend of mine, who I first discovered through reading one of her blog posts. Oh, I would say, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Anyway, we've been in touch. We've met in real life. And she messaged me to say, have you seen this? Art Juice is number 2 in the podcast charts. And I was like, this is so exciting. And then I had to go off and try and find a place where I could see the link to kind of screenshot it. Because it's like, this needs recording for posterity. Then I messaged it to Louise, and then I messaged and said, I'm going to be 5 minutes late because I've got to go out and get some cash for my cleaning lady. Real life.
Well, what was exciting about that was we're number 2 for visual arts and we're behind Talk Art. And I wrote back to you and said, oh my God, that's hosted by a real star. Talk Art's hosted by Russell Tovey, who's an actor here in the UK and a mad art collector. He just loves art. And they have guests like Tracy Emin and Grayson Perry. So for us to be number 2 behind Talk Art is okay with me.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it really just made me think that it's bizarre that actually yesterday, a really good friend of mine messaged me to say, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. Can we chat about it? And I had literally just been talking to him about it while he was on the train on his commute into work, talking about how we did it, how we started, what we didn't know, the fact that we weren't ready for any of it. We didn't know the tech. We didn't know anything. And I'm up here recording now. And if you could see it, I might take a photograph afterwards. Like, I'm in the room that was my studio and is now my daughter's been taking photos in here. This is still not high tech, people. This
No.
is like, we are still kind of just, I thought the phrase is winging it and working it.
That's good. I like that.
I mean, because that's it. It's like, shall we give it a go? And then let's put our energy behind it. So yes, that's what's going to lead us into our main topic, isn't it?
It is. It is. But we didn't even know about that when we started this. Anyway, so the other thing about the podcast is for the last 4 weeks, we've had record downloads. So every week it gets higher than the week before. And every week is higher than it's ever been. And we just finished last week's, and it's again another record. So thank you everybody for finding us and staying with us and telling other people about us and writing reviews, because it really makes a big difference.
Yeah, we couldn't do it without you, absolutely. And it's just, I think the thing, and I was talking to this friend, I said, the thing is, at the beginning you're just putting this thing out into the void. And you have no idea. And, you know, when I log on occasionally and I read your reviews, I can't tell you what a difference it makes. And when I meet you in real life, or like I was out with a friend and somebody recognized me from my voice, it's a kind of bizarre thing. And I both think about you a lot and also try very hard not to think about you all a lot. So yeah. I hope you can understand that, because I think I would totally freeze up if I actually thought. But anyway, I hope you're listening today and you're going to have a great day ahead of you, whether you're walking the dog or cooking or painting or whatever you're doing. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you. So is that what's made you so smiley? Or has what you're working on this week also been making you smiley?
That's a nice phrase too. What I've been working on this week, it's been so good. And I think, do you know what it was? So at the moment, because of the travel issue, I'm doing 2 longer studio days. So I was in on Tuesday and I was listening to last week's interview and with Nicholas Wilton. And I actually said to somebody else, I said, I don't know what it is, but whenever I listen to him, I get so fired up about making my art. I don't know what it is, but that's why, for me, the way he teaches is so special. And I went into the studio on Tuesday and I had this painting that I had done in, I think, November. I don't know if any of you saw it on Instagram. I think I posted it at one point, but it might have been in stories. And it was these really loose, like lemon yellow, bright orange. And it was only really ever intended as an underpainting. I often use really bright colors in an underpainting. But somehow everything kind of hung in place in the right place, to the extent that I really liked it, but yet it also felt thin. So I was at that point where I knew it wasn't finished. A couple of people came and looked at it and they said, oh, you could leave that finished. And I thought, yeah, I could, but it's not right. But there was something in it that was really exciting, but I couldn't see what I could do next because what was there was so in your face strong. Anyway, I went in on Tuesday and totally changed it. And now it's all these kind of beautiful grays and muted pinks, and but with these flashes of bright color underneath. And honestly, it was like a kind of dervish got hold of me. And I left the studio and it was late and it was getting dark and the sky was this amazing color. And I'd worked on some small ones as well. And I thought, what he said last week was, he said, it doesn't matter if you have a good Monday or a bad Monday or a good Thursday or a bad Thursday. And I left the studio and I thought, well, that was a good day in the studio. And I thought about that and I thought, well, actually, we have no way of knowing that, whether it was a good day or a bad. That could have been an atrocious day. Like, it could be like anybody else will look at this and go, ugh. Like, my husband looked at one I showed him and went, well, that's not finished. But, like, I didn't care. Like, I felt fantastic. And actually, do you know what? I hadn't had a day feeling like that about painting. And it was something to do with that just total letting rip on this painting. Like, I knew that it was, I couldn't leave it as it was. And it was almost like I sort of picked up on the energy of the painting and just did something totally different with it. So it was like, it's been the best studio time I've had for a while. Perhaps because I was, sorry, I'm going on, and that I was looking at the work and I was thinking, this is getting to that stage where there's, I'm no longer worried about having work finished for this event. So I can just do what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's really hard. You need that release sometimes, don't you? I think
you do. And I think talking to him had a similar effect on me. I think we should ask him to come every week and then we'll have better painting days. Because what happened to me was, I haven't had much painting time, but I did just after that conversation and for the first few days. And I had a couple of small paintings that were really ugly, just play boards, 12-inch panels that were lying around, and they just were horrible. But I didn't know what to do with them because they were so horrible. There was nothing to work with, really. And so I just did some really bold things on them because he was talking about making bolder moves when he's stuck. He's got this thing now about making bolder moves. And I thought, right, well, literally, I've got nothing to lose here. So I did that. And one of the paintings just very quickly became finished. And I love it. And it's really exciting to me. The other one still has some more work to do. But I loved them. I loved them so much. I took photographs and put it on Instagram. And I thought, you know, that like, same thing. That was a really fun session. And it was because I didn't care. And we always have to keep having that lesson. If you don't care, you can free to do the things that I think you're supposed to do, the things your intuition guides you to do. But I'm very quick to get back into thinking. And that day I didn't think at all. So it was really good fun. Now, for me, painting's ground to a halt because there's workmen everywhere and I can't do anything at the moment.
It's funny, there was something earlier this week and my husband said, you know, what are you doing? Are you working this evening? And I said, no, I'll come and sit down and find something to watch with you on telly. You go in and see if you can find something to watch. So off he went in And I went in and he said, I thought we'd watch this. Now, this is going to make you laugh. What he'd found was Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop Lab.
Oh, my God.
Now, whether he thought he was going to watch Gwyneth Paltrow steaming her vagina, I don't know. But that's not what it was. It was like the team and I don't know. I don't look at the website. I don't know a lot about what she does. So I thought, okay, well, this is a weird thing for him to have chosen. Let's go with it. Anyway, it was about the team going off. And she said, the whole thing is about trying to live your best purpose of life that you can. And what is it that we need? And what helps people? And what makes them tick? And what changes things around for people? And so the whole team was going off somewhere and they were taking, under therapist supervisions, amounts of magic mushrooms. So they were talking about taking psychedelic drugs. And there's also quite a lot of articles around about microdosing with psychedelics. But what was fascinating about this program was that there is a particular, I don't know what you call it, research thing set up in the States where they're looking at giving people therapy when they've been taking, I think that was MDMA in that case. Because what it does is it allows your brain to access all those subconscious parts that normally we resist. Like normally we second guess. So in traditional talk therapy would take a long time to kind of get through. You can get straight into that part really quickly. And then we ended up having this discussion about, and my husband was saying, is brain and how your brain relates to your body and your mind and all this stuff about muscle memory is nonsense because it's your brain that has the memory. And I said, but is that the whole point? Is that we still don't know how all this stuff fits together in terms of what we feel like, what we do, what our body's doing, how all the various kind of hormones trigger us. And it's just, there is so much to all of it. And I just think I've never taken magic mushrooms.
No.
I like to.
They grow in the fields around us. So if you come and visit, I'm sure I can take you to find some.
Yeah, well, apparently I'm not allowed to say that with teenagers in the house.
Right.
But the point is, I think that there's something to do with whatever we can do that accesses that deeper layer of ourselves. Somehow it's the same thing that we always talk about, overriding all those mental blocks. And it's an inherent part of being human. It's tough, but I think maybe more so as artists compared to perhaps other people, that's what we're striving for, to get dig.
Well, I actually had an experience with that the other day, because I've told all of you before that I'm not happy with my weight at the moment, and I have tried all kinds of things and I can't seem to do anything about it. And have you ever heard of Marissa Peer? And she's a British hypnotherapist, and she has this method of hypnotherapy called rapid transformation something. I've got it wrong, but RTT therapy. And it's a way, again, of accessing the subconscious and finding out what it is that's causing whatever problem you've got, what it is from childhood or what it is from some other time that's causing it. Anyway, I had this initial chat with someone, which was a free exploratory call. And she was saying, there's something buried that you don't know what it is. There's something there. We'll get to it. It's easy. And as she started talking about something being buried, I was in tears.
Yeah.
And I wasn't upset that day. But I was, and she was saying, are you okay? And I was like, yep, I'm fine. I was trying to pretend I was okay. But it was, something was there. And so anyway, I'm going to book a session and we'll see if what comes out. But I do think that part of ourselves, I see it with my students in my courses all the time, when they take the thinking and self-criticism and throw it all in the bin. And sometimes I get them to make an ugly painting. That's one of the exercises, to make the worst thing you can possibly make. Apparently it's an art therapy exercise as well, but I didn't know that when I thought of it. But it just releases you from caring. And then people go, actually, I don't think it's ugly. I really like it. Mm-hmm. Because there's something in there that's coming out from inside us.
But isn't it interesting how sometimes we need that intervention, I suppose is the right word, from somebody else, or perhaps a totally, and I think that maybe this is key to it, a totally different way of thinking or approaching it. Like we've both talked before about how, you know, both of us, I think, actually are quite thinky people. And we've talked before about EFT and talked with, you know, my coach, Judith Morgan, who kind of introduced me to this whole kind of vaguely woo-woo law of attractions, you know, and it is a different way of thinking. That's the point. It's like changing your thinking so that you start to view the world in a different way, understand things in a different way, and then ultimately act in a different way as a kind of inevitability.
Yeah. So let's move on to our main topic, because that's a perfect segue. So we have both been reading the book that I mentioned last week, Michael Neal's Creating the Impossible. And I think he's doing an online challenge at the moment for Creating the Impossible as well. But I'm not signed up for that. Are you signed up for that, Alice?
No, I just thought...
We're just reading the book. So, and there'll be some people listening who go, oh, not that old chestnut, because I think he's been doing this for years and years and years and years, but it's new to us. But it's all about this idea of how you think about something affects what happens and how it all pans out for you. So I'd say it's a little bit less woo-woo than some of the things in this area. So he's not so much, it's a little bit law of attraction, but it's more about action taking. But action taking from a place of complete freedom from stress and worry. Is that how you would describe it?
You might have got further into it than I have, but Judith actually worked with him years ago. So my coach, Judith Morgan, and she said he changed, you know, he used to be more about kind of goal setting. And then she said something happened and it changed, and he started coming at it all from this, what he calls the inside out approach. So I am still, how many days into it? I have just got to day one. So I've read the first 50 odd pages, which are the kind of introduction, how he thinks about it. It's kind of priming you, really.
Yeah.
And he also says that he says you can follow it all the way through day by day, or you can just dip out into it or out of it. But it's supposed to be just 5 minutes a day. And the reason that I'm doing it is because when you mentioned it last week, I thought, I don't have anything impossible at the moment. And I'm not actually sure at the moment, I don't know, maybe I don't need to, whether that is or isn't a problem. All I'm doing at the moment is what I need to do that feels good each day. Hmm. And maybe that is the ultimate end result. Maybe that is that's fine. Just doing it that way is fine. But when you said last week, you know, create an impossible dream that makes you gasp, giggle or grin, I thought, I don't have one. So would it be nice? Maybe. The danger for me is then that I kind of kick in all guns blazing on, how am I going to make this happen, and start to get a little bit too effortful about it. So I'm interested, and I just wonder if we should just do a little mini report back each week. So how far in are you?
So I think I'm further in. I don't know what day I'm up to, but I've read quite a lot of the days. And I decided last week, I said, oh, I've got an impossible idea. And I did have an impossible idea. I'm not 100% sure that's what I want to do. So, which was a book, and I would like to write a book at some point, but I'm not sure I'm passionate about it. And one of the things he keeps mentioning as you get further into it is, like you said, you have to be something that really makes you feel excited. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to do that. And I'm not sure that makes me feel that excited. So what I decided to do is go through the whole book and read all the days and not be with nothing in mind. And just see, you know, and see what, if something pops into mind. I have several things I'd like to do, which I suppose feel impossible time-wise. That's why they feel impossible. It's like, where would I find the time? Yeah. And I have some financial goals that feel impossible. So maybe that could be. So I'm not sure yet what I want it to be. But as you go through, it's very relaxed and easy. And that's what I love about it. It keeps saying, if you have an idea and then you go a few weeks into it and think, actually, it's not making me gasp or giggle or grin. I'm just feeling hard. then that wasn't the right idea, so just don't bother. And it's okay if that happens. It's okay if you go, you know what, actually, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to swim the channel. I've decided it's not my thing. And it reminds me of the way we work when we're painting, because he keeps saying it's all about playing. It's all about testing an idea, playing yeah. with it, relaxing with it, and just seeing if it's fun. If it's not fun, drop it and find another one. Mostly it's about the fact that, see, maybe you don't need it, because if you have something, like let's say I had this burning thing inside, I want to write this book, and it's just eating me up because I don't feel like I can do it. Or the way some people are with painting, I want to paint really big expressive abstracts, but I just can't do it. He's giving you a way to say, that's your thoughts telling you you can't do it. You yeah. actually can. And yeah. so here's another way of approaching it. But perhaps you just don't have anything that you want that doesn't feel eminently possible.
I love the story that he tells about, he's talking about somebody who he worked with who was running a business and it wasn't working, and it was working, but he no longer wanted to be involved in it, but he didn't want to bail out because he thought he'd lose the investors. But at the moment he could only think that he either stayed working in this business that he didn't love, or if he bailed out, then he would be letting everybody down and the business was going to go down the pan. And he said, the thing is, I love this bit. He said, I explained that the mind works like a virtual reality generator. Whatever we think about seems real to us for as long as we're thinking about it. The more we think about it, the more real it seems. So the fact that he couldn't imagine a scenario where the business survived without him was evidence for how the mind works. It's not an accurate prediction of the future. And that, you know, keep thinking those thoughts means that you can't see any other possible way of doing it. And it's quite hard, because we are talking about changing your mind, and we're talking about catching your thoughts when they put you in a certain position. And it's hard because we're talking about belief systems that we've built up over time because of all the evidence that we've seen in our life, all the things people have told us, all the things we've tested previously and known to be true, because that's how we learn as humans, right? Because if yeah. we didn't learn, we just keep making idiot mistakes time and time again. Like every time you bite your tongue or burn your hands on the oven or, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, but I love that idea that it's just down to us to challenge what we're thinking.
I mean, and we've talked about this before, so I won't bang on about it, but that story in the book was my story. Yeah. I truly believed if I left the business that I built with my husband, then it would crash and burn. We would be kicked out of our house. We would be poor. We would not be able to afford food. I don't have any other skills, so what else could I do to make enough money? Phil's worked in that business for years and years. We both were basically unemployable by anyone else by this point, because we worked for ourselves for so long. This was all my belief system. And what's actually happened is that the profits from that business have decreased, because without me in it, we have to hire people to replace me. And so therefore it doesn't make as much money, but it hasn't crashed and burned. It doesn't lose money. He's happily running that and keeping, while I do something which has more than made up the income that we had. And so that was, but that felt so entirely real to me. I can't yeah, tell
totally,
you.
Totally. Yeah. Total solid wall.
It made me angry when someone said it wasn't real, because you don't know my reality. You don't know. But that description of a virtual reality projector, that's exactly what it is. When you were saying that, I was just thinking of many, many years ago, my best friend, she was so in love, and the guy that she was in love with ditched her, and she was on the she was, I think, fairly suicidal, very, very, very depressed, and she just kept saying, life's not worth living without him. It'll never be worth living. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone quite so brokenhearted. And I've been pretty brokenhearted, but she was really. And she was, that was virtual reality projector. She was projecting out, because she kept thinking about him. That's all she could see. Now, fast forward all these years later, she's been married twice now to other people. She's got three children. She's very happily married this second time. If I could say to her, would you like to go backwards and go back and find him and get married to him and not have all these children that you've got? I think she'd say, no, I quite like to keep my children. Thank you.
Yeah. But
that's it again, isn't it? You're projecting onto the world this belief. And the more you think about that person you're missing or that thing you don't have, the more that's your reality.
So I think maybe the key to it then, whether it's your book or whatever it is to go forward into something without hanging too tightly onto it and understanding that actually probably whatever you're thinking, whatever your impossible dream is, it's going to change along the way. Like, and again, it's the same as painting, isn't it? If you go into a painting with a like crystal clear vision of how you want the outcome to be, I can't imagine anything more frustrating, actually. And, you know, this is from the person who, you know, loves planning things, but you've got to be able to be fluid and adapt a bit along the way. And I think take time to recognize when you found that hard and yet it has brought you something different that you have appreciated. And I now try to kind of, not all the time, but try to set those situations up. So I'm almost looking for evidence for myself to disprove my old thought patterns. So example was when we were away last summer and I thought, I'm not going to plan everything. I'm just going to let the days unfold. If that means nobody wants to go anywhere, we don't go anywhere. If we don't find where we're going, we don't find it. And instead we had a totally different kind of holiday. But, you know, I'm consciously at that point registering, this is okay too, actually. We're going to go with the flow. We're going to do something a bit different. And those kind of things help me when I get back into my perhaps more natural state of, but I want to know what's going to happen. But I want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, hang on. Yeah, but actually you also know now that sometimes when you don't know what's going to happen, it works out pretty good.
Yeah.
But you've got to, I still think that it's about giving your brain that kind of evidence that it knows both sides of the picture, perhaps.
Yeah. And that's part of what this book, as he gets into it more, it's part of, he's asking you to trust the process at the beginning and then to notice the things that happen.
Yeah.
And so, for example, you have to sit quietly for 5 minutes a day. I must admit, I haven't been able to do that every day because I always forget to sit quietly for 5 minutes, or I sit for 2 minutes and then go, oh crap, I didn't do this. And I jump up and forget about that. But on the days when I did do it, both times that I did it in the first few days, a bit later on in the day, an idea came to me about the book that I jotted down and thought, oh yeah, that would make that easier if I did it that way. Or, oh yeah, I could talk to that person. And so he's asking you to just see that when you actually drop the belief it's impossible and commit to it in your heart, you don't have to start writing a list of goals and action plans and lists. Just commit to that's what you're going to do. Sit quietly for 5 minutes every day and then see what starts to come in.
Mm.
And I've got something in inspiration that came in as well as a result of me. The other thing he says is that when you say it out loud to other people, I think I'm going to swim the channel, write a book, lose 60 pounds, earn $1 million. People start to offer help to you that you wouldn't have. You start to hear, oh, well, I know someone who swam the channel. I'll ask them to give you a ring and chat to you about it or whatever. You know, people can't offer help if you don't say out loud what it is that you want. So that's the other side of it. So we discovered that.
So here's a question then, because I was thinking, so yeah, the day one is sit and think. And I think the question is, wouldn't it be amazing if?
Yeah. So do you not have, sorry, you were going to ask me a question.
Well, I was going to, and my immediate thought was, I can start a new notebook for this.
And a spreadsheet.
I wouldn't start a spreadsheet because I think this needs to be handwritten. But then I thought, talk about overthinking. Well, hang on a minute. But then that's keeping it separate. I think this needs to go within my annual planner so that it is, I'm making a point about it being part of my life. It's not a separate project. It's part of everything. So I'm going to try and keep it. But I think some of the key thing about this is how you capture those ideas when it happens. And I'm in two minds about this because I think sometimes if you don't capture an idea, it flits away. And then equally, ideas that are your ideas that are meant to stay, they keep coming back. So, you know, they just keep resurfacing, maybe in a different form or a different context.
Yeah. I don't want to keep a planner, but I am keeping a few notes because the idea that came to me, this is interesting, actually. The idea that came to me was to write the book in terms of little stories about other people, which then tie into what I want to say. And and what happened is I kept picking up books or opening web pages and seeing just the perfect story and thinking, oh, that would go well. And so I've just started a Word document where I just quickly write a note of that story and where I found it, because otherwise those things would flit away. I know I would know what kind of book I was trying to write, but I'd completely forget. What was that thing I read about Picasso and where did I read it?
All the time.
So if I make a note and say it's that and I found it on this web page, at least I've got it if I ever do decide to do this. But I didn't think of it as a planner. But I was going to ask you, so you don't have anything that feels impossible that you'd love to have happen? Like, what if I said to you, Alice, you
could obvious thing
have £10 million in the bank and never have to worry about money again?
No.
And be free to do whatever you want with your days for the rest of your life because you've got £10 million saved up.
No.
No.
I mean, the obvious thing is, you know, have a big gallery show with all my work. But I don't know if I want that yet. I mean, I think that comes under lists of things that I should think I want. I think I should want.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if it's actually what I do want. I mean, it comes under perhaps impossible or whatever his percentage is, the outline of impossible. But it doesn't, I don't know, maybe what it is that it doesn't feel specifically me enough yet. It doesn't feel unique enough. It feels a little bit generic, like, you know, big gallery show. Like, look, you can hear it in my voice.
Yeah.
You know.
You're not giggling, grinning.
No.
At that.
No.
No. In fact, when I think of that, I always picture New York. I think that's just because I used to live there. So that's what pops in my mind when I think of galleries. But I think, oh God, the stress. All I can think of that would be is a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of people expecting things of you, a lot of cost, a lot of fear, and it doesn't make me feel excited at all.
Which is your, you know, inherent belief about it. So the question is, how do you turn it around? So what would make it not stressful, not difficult? What would make it fun and something that you would look forward to and anticipate and enjoy and think it wasn't working
I know.
Towards? How do you change those things?
If that it was your show instead of mine, then I'd really be looking forward to coming to the opening, having a nice glass of wine and saying, well done, Alice.
But I think maybe this is the thing about making it too concrete.
Maybe it's just not what we want, though. Maybe that's just not what we want. See, the money thing, I don't want money because I want things. There's nothing I want. I love my house. I've got a beat up old car that's fine until it breaks down. There's nothing I actually want. But what would be lovely is to have enough money saved up in the bank, because I have no pension and no other source of income because I've been self-employed my whole life, that I could, if I wanted to, just get up, potter down for a cup of coffee, go and paint all day, maybe have a nap, and then walk the dog and never have to worry about what am I going to do next to earn an income. So that to me is something that feels like it might be worth creating the impossible. And that does feel impossible. That feels like, no, that's not going to happen.
And I think the other thing here in this is, like, you're talking about the future. I think there's a difference between what I think I want now for the future me and what I'm happy doing now. I'm working hard at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. There is a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I know that it's not good for me. Like, even things like the ratings in the channel, it's exciting, but I can feel like it gets my adrenaline going and it's exciting. Like, I love it. I love thinking of all the things that I've got to be doing and the things that are helping people. But I also know that probably long term, it's not very good for me. And I'm not sure it's something that's sustainable. I don't feel that at the moment. Like I was just saying to my husband yesterday, haven't got ill this winter, didn't get ill last winter. I feel like I've happily doing it all at the moment. But if you said to me, you'll still be working at this pace in 5 years, I think I'd say, no, I'm not. I don't want to be. But that feels like it's a pulling back thing rather than a leaning into something thing, which is a difference. So,
yes, yes.
I don't know. I don't think there's an answer yet, but I just think maybe, you know, as an accountability thing, perhaps for both of us, it would be quite interesting. And there might be times where we don't want to make it public what our thing is going to be.
Yeah.
So we might have to be sensitive about how we handle this.
Yeah.
But I think it's an interesting book and I like his approach and I'm going to be trying to work through it and maybe we'll just have a little touch base every now and again. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
But everybody don't be waiting for that book because I'm still not sure that's what I'm going to do. I had so many emails saying, I can't wait for that book. So let's move on to Inside Outside. What's inspired you this week?
Well, mine's a little bit boring, I'm afraid, because it's kind of the same as it's been. I'm rather enjoying my tube journeys and I have settled into a pace. So I am reading art books on the way in to get my kind of head in arty mode. And I'm reading books. And we've got two. So I've got the Michael Neal book and I've got the Find Your Voice book from which I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, which is a voice coach book. But I like the fact that it's about grounding yourself in your body, essentially. And one of the exercises is that it's really good for you to sing every morning. And I think it is actually a good point. And I thought, I haven't sung out loud for a really long time. I tend to listen to talk radio. So I was listening to really good sing-along songs on the tube. And I thought, this is not the place to do this where you want to sing along to Buddy Holly. So got to pick your moments on that one. But I was reading, I'm not going to be able to find the actual section now because it's a beautiful book and I didn't want to write in it. Anyway, I'm reading a book about Patrick Heron, mm-hmm. whose work I don't actually like very much, if I'm honest, but I'm really enjoying reading the book about how he thinks about color, particularly about how he breaks space down and is talking about edges and tension between things at the edges of paintings and flatness and unflatness of color and about how it all relates. So I think that's just an interesting point, how you can really learn from something that you don't even necessarily like the end result. The end result perhaps doesn't matter. It's the process of learning and understanding it. So it's just, the book is just called Patrick Heron. It's a Tate publication edited by Andrew Wilson and Sarah Matson. And it's that one that I found in the secondhand bookshop a few weeks ago. So
right.
I'm not sure if you'll be able to find a copy, but find your own thing, maybe.
I think that's such a good point, though. The aesthetics of what we like as in art is totally personal and has nothing to do with the quality or not of the person's work or what they've put into it or what they know or what they understand. And so you can learn so much. And I tend to buy books about the artists whose work I actually love. And in doing that, I'm just missing out a whole bunch of knowledge, which I could explore. When I come down to London in March, I'm going to be near that bookshop. So you have to tell me exactly where it is so that I can go in and find some.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that can be quite hard about buying art books online is that you don't get to flick through and see the inside pages. Whereas for me, I love the books that have got interviews with artists. You hear them talking about it. They've got, you know, historical essays that they did, interviews that they did. And there's a really interesting argument in this one about Greenberg, the art critic back in the 50s. And apparently they had this dialogue about what constitutes an abstract painting. Maybe that's something to go into when I've read a little bit further of it. But they both had totally different views, you know, two highly, you know, esteemed, you know, by that stage, they both kind of totally got their markers of as an established place in the art world, two different viewpoints. So, yeah. You know. Good to read. What about you?
Me, I've got two different things. I'm stealing extra time this week. So I've got one is going back to Creating the Impossible. This is just a little bit of the magic that happened from reading the book and saying out loud what my impossible might be. That somebody got in touch with me by email who listens. Hi, Amy Stewart. Amy Stewart is a successful author. She's written, I think it was 4 or 6 New York Times bestselling books. She's written more books than that, fiction and nonfiction. But she loves to paint. And so she listens to us when she's painting and drawing. And so she sent me this message and said, I just want to let you know, if you just want to discuss the process of publishing a book, or if you just want to chat through any ideas, I'm happy to do that. I'd really like to help, just because I'd like to see this book exist. Mm-hmm. And I just chalked it down as a little bit of Michael Neal magic, you know, that somebody. So thank you, Amy. I haven't responded to your email yet, but I will. That was a very generous offer.
But by the way, though, he doesn't say it's magic. I say it's magic. But what he says is, you see, a remarkable amount of success in the world comes down to people staying in the game long enough to get lucky. Unfortunately, then, luck is a predictable part of the process.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're right. It feels lucky. It feels like out of the blue magic. It's not. It's just kind of part of just
showing up. Yeah. Just showing up and working at it and doing it.
And asking for it. Yeah. Hang on a minute. You're also glossing over about the fact that you messaged me this week and said, oh, I really want to ask this person. I feel so sick about asking them to come on the podcast. Shall I do it anyway? And I said, yeah, do it anyway. And then you messaged me back and went, they've said yes.
Yes. Secret person that you can't know about yet. But secret person said yes straight away and said, can I send you a copy of my book free to both of you? So he's sending a copy of his book to you too.
Oh, you've let it go now with
I know I said he, but people still have to guess who secret person is.
But I think that's another really good example of, like, this feels like it would be really cheeky, really impossible. Why would anybody else want to talk to us?
Yeah.
But what have you got to lose?
Yeah. Like, and what, the answer came within like an hour. Yes. So, yeah, that was a little bit of magic. So that was another. So actually, I've got 3 inspiring things, because the third inspiring thing is that the skylights have begun to be cut in my studio. Yesterday, there were 3 big holes in the ceiling because the roofers have come. And today, there'll be 3 more big holes when they cut the ones on the other side. And then tomorrow, the skylights will go in. And all of a sudden, that space is filled with light. And it's just really exciting.
Yeah.
And the electrician's here today putting in.
That was something that you had to not give up on as well, wasn't it, really?
Yes, yes.
I think it's important as well, though, with this, all of this, is to say that it doesn't always feel this way. It doesn't always feel like everything's slotting into place. You just ask and things happen. Sometimes it feels difficult and things aren't happening. And if you're in that space, perhaps, you know, you're listening to this one today and you're just shouting, shut up.
Like I was 2 years ago. You don't understand how rubbish my life is. You don't understand how
I know. And there's nothing more bloody annoying than that, actually.
I know.
So I'm just kind of thinking how you take it back. Do you have to take it back a notch so that you can begin on this? I mean, I always say you just have to accept that there are going to be ups and downs. And if it's important enough, you find a way, you get through it.
Well, 2 years ago.
But that feels a bit bullish.
2 years ago when I was arguing for no, it's not possible. It's so ludicrous.
Is that because the gap's too big though?
It's too big. And this is what he says in the book as well. You cannot see. And it's the same when we start a painting. You can't see the end. You can only see this little bit ahead of you. Somebody's got a quote about when you're in fog in the car, you can only see a few feet ahead of you, but you can get the whole journey that way.
So that's really funny, because I always say it's like if you're trying to cross a misty lake on stepping stones, and you've just got to take that step out and assume that your feet are going to find the stepping stones, and you can just find them. You can only see the next one step. And you know, that's what it's like walking on Dartmoor sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that's where that came from. So that's interesting. Yeah. So in the car, we drive a car and we can only see 40 yards ahead of it, or even forget the fog, even at night. How much can you see with headlights?
But the only reason you keep driving or walking on the stepping stones is that you believe there are more stepping stones, and you believe there's more road, and you believe if you keep going, you'll get where you're going. And so I think for anybody who's in that place I was in a few years ago, what you have to do is work to drop the limiting beliefs. The thing that shook me out of it was when our friend Georgina, who was the person who helped me with this, Georgina Noel, when she said to me after an argument, she said, "You can keep arguing for these limitations if you want to. I mean, you know, it doesn't bother me. I'm going home and you're stuck in this life. But if you want to let go of them, I can help you let go of them." And I was like, oh yeah, why am I, you know? Yeah. And so that's all I would say to people is, in this book, he's saying the same thing. He's saying, just drop the limiting belief that it's impossible.
Yeah.
And then just see if it's impossible. Just give it a chance. And so whatever thing it is that you really want but feels impossible, maybe it's to give up a job and work full time, or maybe it's to drop one day a week at work and do more painting, or whatever it is, just give it a chance. Put it out there. Read this book. It's not very expensive. And then just think. Just see if it's possible.
Yeah, just see.
That's it for us for this week, everybody. You can find me at louisefletcherart.com, and you can find Alice at
alicesheridan.com.
Oh, you don't have to have art in your name, you see. I've got Louise Fletcher as an actress, so I can't have Louise Fletcher.
Well, I did. When I first started it, Alice Sheridan was, I think she was an Irish lawyer or a police officer, something like that. So when you Googled, that's what came up. So I've had to, work to knock her off of Google.
All right, everybody, see you next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, that's good. We haven't got any outtakes, so can you say something funny?
Right, I wanted to say that bit about the beginning about coming on and...
Oh, do you know what you can do with... You know, I got this Amazon Echo thing. Amazon, you know, Alexa. And so you can say, "Alexa, tell me a joke." And then it tells you like the worst jokes. I can't even remember any of them because they're so bad. But it's entertaining every once in a while.
Because I have to be kid friendly, probably. So
yeah, it's like your
good ones.
Your Christmas jokes. Can you remember your Christmas jokes like that? Also, if you say to Alexa, Alexa, this will only work. This won't work for the younger listeners. But if you say, "Alexa, who is the walrus?" It'll say, "The walrus is Paul."
Oh, really?
Yeah. It says, "Here's another clue for you all. The walrus is Paul."